It's time for Twit the Steampunk Edition. We're going to talk about spyware from CNET. I can't believe they're doing that. The Microsoft reorganization, the new 41-megapixel camera phone, and a whole lot more. Ed Bott, Natalie Morris, and Matthew Panzerino join us next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for Twit is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 414, recorded July 14th, 2013. Letters from Deadwood. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter Twit. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, visit squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT7. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy, iPhone, or other smartphone is worth at gazelle.com. And by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with colleagues and clients from anywhere. You can share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code TWIT. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show that covers the week's tech news. Hello, everybody. I'm Leo Laforte. Joining us right now, my old friend Ed Bott, formerly editor-in-chief of PC Computing. Right, Ed?
That's right.
Wow, I got it right. Blogger at ZDNet, Windows expert, Santa Fe refugee. Hello.
It's a pleasure to be here, Leo.
So glad to have you. Matthew Panzerino's here. I think this is your first time, Matthew. He's the managing editor at The Next Web from Fresno, California. Hi, Matthew.
Hello, sir. How are you doing?
I'm thrilled to have you. Have you done TNT or something else?
This Week in Startups.
This Week in Startups, which is not our show, much to the chagrin of many of us. The reason I'm dressed so strangely, for those of you watching on video, is I finally got my steampunk laptop. So I thought I should dress for the occasion. This was built by, look at this. This cost me a mint about 2 years ago. That's the good news, is the money is long gone. Built by a datamancer.net. It is a normal Asus Windows 7 laptop from about 2 years ago, because it took him 2 years to encase it in wood. There you go. What's his name? Richard Nagy, I think. To encase it in wood, to put brass keyboard on it, and all of that stuff. I'm not sure I would recommend this to anybody, but I got it now, so I'm going to keep it. But if you don't mind, I will take off the goggles and the hat, because that's a little much. Hat not included. That's a nice hat. So we're going to be joined in a bit by Natalie Morris. She's on vacation, and so she's on vacation time. But that's okay. There's plenty to talk about. We were talking before the show began, though, about something that happened during the radio show. And I thought it'd be worth kind of highlighting this before we get into the hard news. And I guess Ed knows a little bit about this. Somebody called the radio show and said, hey, I downloaded something from download.com. And as a result, my Windows machine got a browser helper object, BHO, installed that changed my home page, that changed my search engine. I can't change it back. What is this? And I said, well, as far as I'm concerned, that's malware. And you said that this is something that's being done routinely by not just download.com, but a lot of download engines, Ed?
Yep, absolutely. Download.com is either the largest or the second largest source of software for Windows and the Mac in the world. The other one is Softpedia. And it's not 100% of the software that they make available, but some non-trivial percentage of it is wrapped.
Can you tell when you get it that it's wrapped? Is there a way to know?
It will have the name CNET in the installer, but when you fire up the installer, it will say, you know, welcome to the CNET download installer. They're not trying to hide anything. This is all a reasonably sophisticated computer user who goes through this can either halt the installation or opt out of everything that's in there. There's nothing in there that's going to sneak on there without you having to have approved it
Let's see. So he said he downloaded the free YouTube downloader, which is one of the top 10 downloads on CNET. And it does say, CNET's editor's note, the download now link will download a small installer file. Remain online and double-click the installer. So this is the CNET software, the CNET wrapper. It says iron install, and I'm going to run that.
Yeah, iron install. So this is an Israeli company that.
Let's watch this because let's see how easy this is. Well, the thing it installed on his system was kind of nasty, frankly. Okay, so here's a license agreement. Do I have to read this to find out?
So this is not the CNET installer.
Oh, this is something else.
Yeah. So
maybe I'm not going to hit something. Oh, wait a minute. Here you go. Choose installation type for the Delta toolbar. Install free YouTube downloader and Delta toolbar, a popular free toolbar designed to make searching and browsing easier. I allow Delta Search to be my default search engine, homepage, and new tab.
Yeah.
So if you read that, you'll say, no, I'm going to do advanced instead of the recommended quick install. And now I can uncheck those settings.
No, you did it backwards. You gotta leave that checked. Now start from the bottom up.
You got to do it in the right order?
It's like a video game.
Okay, now they're all unchecked. You're saying that had I unchecked the first one, it looks like they're below it, so unchecking the first one will get rid of all of it. But no, it doesn't, and you need to do all three. Okay.
See what they've done there?
See what they did? See what they did there? This isn't even the CNET one.
No. So like I was saying...
Wait a minute, there's more.
I've gone through some pieces of software that will install five different programs before they ever get to the thing that you actually wanted. And then in addition to that, one or more of the programs that they install will at some point in the future download and install its own extra toolbars and stuff. It's awful.
I guess it's legal only because they tell you, and you're saying, this says Webcake. This is another piece now from the same downloader. Is a browser add-on that sweetens sites with features and tools for enhanced search results, inline word references, site ratings and reviews, special offers, and comparing deals. In other words, I'm going to get a hell of a lot of pop-ups.
Well, it's even worse than that because what it's probably going to do is what's called injection.
Yes, it says it will include advertisements. And are not affiliated with underlying sites.
And so what's going to happen is if you were to go to, say, Twit TV, it would take, if you have an ad on the page there,
it would
replace that ad with one of their own.
Holy cow.
So
I'm going to decline, so that will stop it, right?
That will stop it.
Okay, I declined. Wait a minute, there's more.
This one's really bad.
Safe Saver is designed to save you money wherever you shop online. Simply visit a participating online store. It's going to show me coupons. It's an ad-supported software, no cost. La, la, la. Decline. So what does that do? It's going to just put comparison pop-ups up.
That's going to take over pretty much the bottom half of the browser window.
Oh, geez.
Right. When you're at a site that's trying to sell you something like Amazon, they'll put... their own ads and links on the bottom of it, trying to get you to buy from them.
Now
they're basically replacing the web experience mm-hmm. with their own experience. And pop-ups would be bad enough, but these are actually rewriting the web pages that you think you're voluntarily going to.
That's that injection technique again,
right?
And you could see how an average person would say, well, that's all right, and say, okay. Although, okay, so I'm going to decline that. So now it's going to install. I'm terrified because I don't usually use Windows, and I'm going to really be sorry.
We're not going to be able to tell from your computer because you had so much crapware on there. Oh, no. We actually will be able to tell. So when you get to the end of this, what you can do is go to the Manage Programs window.
And look at what's been installed.
Control Panel. Right. And either sort it by date or filter to show today's date. And then you'll be able to see what, if anything, they snuck on there. Holy but man. It looks like you did. The way these things all work, the way that they stay above law enforcement's radar is to at least hew to the letter of the law by giving you the right to opt out of all of those installations. So they will go through. They'll say, hey, we disclosed everything there. We had links to our terms of service agreement.
You agreed to it.
Privacy policy. You agreed to it.
So it isn't really, it's not fair to call it malware. It isn't malware. As long as they tell you.
I don't know. The line on some of these things is, I would call it extremely deceptive software, especially when you install one of those things and you think that all you're doing is installing one thing. But what you don't realize in the terms of service that you didn't read is that it reserves the right to install more software later on.
Later.
Oh, I had a neighbor who came over. She brought me her computer over, and she had done something very similar. She had a new computer. She wanted to and I had installed Windows on it for her. I know it was perfectly clean.
Right.
When she brought it over, she had gone looking for a Post-it notes program, something like she had used before. She went and installed this thing, and all of a sudden she was getting pop-ups. She was getting things taking over her browser page. And I went in and looked at it, and I saw the date when she had installed this Post-it notes program and a few other things with it. And then every 2 or 3 days after that, there were more programs that had installed themselves.
That's what's really scary. I mean, but you agreed to it. So Ed has coined a new phrase, a new term, doucheware. It's not malware. No,
that was Matthew.
Oh. Matthew, nice job.
Oh yeah, thanks. I put that on my tombstone.
Well, and you know, here's the interesting thing. It's not just and by the way, the reason people go to download.com is because it says we scan it for malware before we give it to you. So people go there because they think it's safer. So that's even more annoying. Secondly, it's not just download.com, as you said, other downloaders, but even Oracle's doing this with Java now.
Oh, Oracle's done this with Java for years. And to me, what's worse, the worst thing about Java is that it's not just the first time you install it, you have to make a choice, and then after that, it's fine. You know, you have to keep Java up to date.
Right. Really important.
You don't dare not.
Yeah.
And so each time Oracle prompts you to update Java, you have to go through that installer and uncheck the box for the Ask Toolbar again.
Each time.
It'd be like, it's like your doctor tries to give you tries to sell you on a timeshare every time he gives you a vaccination.
Doucheware.
Doucheware.
Hard to believe that this is going on. Now, Ed, you said that this is because shareware authors no longer can expect to get paid.
Correct. So we have the software industry, as buyers, we have become accustomed to thinking that $10 is a horrendous sum of money to pay for software, and that $4.99 or 99 cents is what an app should cost.
Right.
Right. And so a lot of good software that used to cost $20 or $30, sometimes $15, sometimes $10, the authors can't get anyone to pay for that anymore. And they can't make any money delivering, Windows or Mac software and having to support it and support downloads and support registration and licensing and support themselves. So basically, there's a dilemma that software developers are in. They can either go with these monetization companies which load up their installers with special offers, which in turn allow them to make a frightful sum of money, or they can take a day job and get out of the software business.
Wow. It doesn't seem to be as much of a problem on the Mac in the Mac world, or is it?
I don't know. I have not done as much looking there. I do know that there are I have had people report to me that they've had similar add-ins installed with Mac software. But, you know, the Apple has had their Mac software store for quite a while now, and I think they've conditioned
they're part of the problem,
users,
really, because
to go there.
Yeah, and that's where you start get used to $5, $1 programs. I mean, that's
yeah. The only people who can sell software for $20 or $30 at the Mac store are Apple and a very, right. very small number of companies making high-end professional software.
Right. You know, so I initially was really tempted to chastise CNET and its parent corporation, CBS, for doing this. But now it sounds to me like everybody's doing it.
Well, I think you should. You still should, and I should, and I should. And just full disclosure, I work for ZDNet. ZDNet is a division of CBS Interactive.
This is your company doing this.
This is my company doing this. I have talked to top executives at our company. I have made my feelings about this practice very loudly known. I think it's horrible, but apparently there's enough money.
Yeah,
in it
it's hard to turn away.
They'll go as long as we disclose it properly, and as long as this is a widely accepted industry practice, we're not going to change it.
Wow.
Unless, so you know,
extremely disappointing.
Extraordinarily disappointing, but it is the best argument possible for curated app stores on every platform.
Yeah. Well, and that's probably why Microsoft, Apple, Google, they're all doing it.
Right.
And you don't see this stuff there. Of course, they get a cut, so they're monetizing in other ways. That's just I was shocked. I had no idea. But I don't go to download.com or Softpedia to get my stuff. I like to go to the original author's page, but even there you occasionally see this stuff.
Even there you will still get this stuff if this is what they've chosen.
Right. Well, that YouTube downloader, that wasn't CNET. That was the YouTube downloader doing it.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm sad. Okay,
We started on a bummer, Leo.
No, we're gonna go to a high point, because you know what I brought with me? The blue bag I got at the Motorola event. So we'll talk about that in just a little bit. why don't you try Natalie now? I'll do a little break and we'll see if we can get Natalie on the horn. Meanwhile, I'll talk about stamps.com. This is a pro tip for anybody who does a lot of mailing. You wouldn't do it if you just send a postcard out from now or then. But, you know, there are a lot of people who sell online at Etsy or eBay or Amazon or PayPal, people who send out invoices on a regular basis or mailers. There's really no reason you should be using a postage meter. That's crazy. Really expensive, and there's probably no reason that you should be going to the post office at all when you can just do everything you want from your desk at stamps.com. I mean, literally, 24/7 print postage using your computer and your printer at stamps.com. We've got a deal that'll get you this USB scale for free. That's nice because it you plop the letter on there, it always has exactly the right postage, and there you go, and it'll even recommend the class of mail that you should be using for that package. It'll print labels that you can go right on a box, print right on the envelope with your logo, return address, pull the addresses from the eBay or PayPal or Amazon or Etsy site. It'll everything you need automatically. If you're selling internationally, it'll fill out the international customs forms. Yeah, click that link in the upper right-hand corner there, the microphone, and use our offer code TWIT, and we're going to get you a pretty good deal here. $110 TWIT in the offer code there. $110 bonus value. You get $55 in free postage you can use over the first few months of your stamps account. The digital scale is free. You pay the shipping and handling. I think it's $5. You get a $5 supply kit to make up for that. And, of course, for 4 weeks free of stamps.com. Got to give it a try. If you do mailing at all, stamps.com. Use our offer code TWIT. And we thank them for their support. Look who's here. I realize, Natalie, you're on vacation. Why are you? Why did you agree to even do this?
No, we're back. We're back this week, but it's had a little scheduling snafu with babysitters and such.
I'm sorry.
And we just came back from, we were at Fox Fan Night for my husband Clayton's job, and getting back to prove to take a little bit more time than I thought. So.
Natalie Morris, Clayton Morris's wife, but also the Crash Test Mom at CrashTestMom.com,
where I've learned
everything I ever wanted to know about strollers and then some.
Yeah. Baby apps and robotic strollers and iPad rockers and all of that stuff.
So I don't know what I can say about it. I'm under non-disclosure, which I have not done in 10 years. I don't do these. And so I can't tell you what happened, but they did give me a bag at an event I went to, and I thought, well, I can probably show what's in this bag. Guy Kawasaki gave me a book. There's video. Robert Scoble posted video of me and Guy and everybody and an executive from Motorola. I don't know what he was doing at that event, but he was. What else?
So Guy has now worked for every one of the giants of Silicon Valley.
I asked him, and he said, and I don't think this is under NDA, he said about a third of his time is at Motorola. Good guy to pick for Motorola. I'm not sure what Motorola is about to announce. Maybe it's in this bag they gave us. I haven't gone through it yet. Oh, look. A Jax sound engine. Don't know what, from Saul Republic. And here it is, ladies and gentlemen. You've been waiting for it. The new Moto... Oh, no, it's just a universal portable power pack. That's all. They
Are you
That's
sure?
How they're gonna take the company,
That's all. That's all there is. There ain't no more. So don't ask me about it. I can't say anything at all. But Eric Schmidt has been walking around with something in his hands that doesn't look like anything we've seen before. What do you think that is?
And you're just left holding the bag.
Right? I got is a battery and a bag. But Eric got something there. This is why I don't do NDAs, because I could not say what that is or anything that I might or might not know about it. But if you guys want to say anything, you can.
So we're allowed to
speculate,
kind of break your NDA for you via.
No, you can speculate.
Proxy.
They were very clear. They said you just can't confirm it or deny
right.
it. You just
why don't
right.
you write it in the chat of our rundown, and then we will then
from an unnamed source.
You know what? Letter of every paragraph in the show notes.
You know, I have to say,
what
if,
kind of NDA is this? An Apple kind of NDA? What kind of NDA?
I think they have my firstborn. Actually, I'm not. I tried to read it, but they whisked it away before I got to. What's interesting about this is that the leaks are apparently coming fast and furious for a new phone. We are pretty sure it's going to be called the Motorola X. I can't say anything about that. But Rogers, apparently, a video was leaked out from Rogers that just kind of talked about how it worked and all the things in it. The website isn't active yet, but somebody was able to get it. Rogers.com/MotoX. There it is.
Company dedicated to bringing you the best in Google services and a
this
true
might be fake.
Experience on your smartphone.
It's pretty good for a fake.
Moto X, the first smartphone from the new Motorola, is only available at Rogers.
Only available at Rogers
your
Canada.
Moto X is ready
present.
To listen and respond. Talk to it, and it learns your voice. With the power of Google Now, it tells you what you need to know, even when you're not touching the screen. Okay, Google Now, what's the forecast for today?
Today's forecast for Toronto is 25 degrees with a thunderstorm.
That's
to
not fiction.
To use your Moto X, you only need your voice. Without touching it at all, you can get directions, set an alarm, or do nearly anything just by talking. Plus, with the speed of the Rogers LTE network, your responses will be delivered nearly instantly. Moto X's personalized experience also includes active updates. This means Moto X is always paying attention and ready to tell you what you need to know. Instead of a blinking light that doesn't actually tell you anything, information quietly appears on the screen. You decide if updates need to be addressed right away or if they can wait until later. Moto X can also launch the camera in a flash. No need to press a button or slide an icon. Just twist your wrist twice and it's ready to shoot. Once the camera is launched, start snapping photos by pressing anywhere on the touchscreen.
No need to
We can stop
press
it.
The shutter button.
So, what would this be of interest to anybody? It's the first phone, really, that Google. Apparently, everything up to now that Motorola has released has been was in the pipeline before Google acquired them.
Right.
That looks right. like a little bit more of a Google experience.
Yeah, this it seems to be.
Go ahead, Matthew.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Google Now is obviously their marquee feature, right? And Google knows it and is starting to kind of embrace that. And so I think that building a phone essentially around Google Now was the best thing they could have done, you know, if this is indeed, you know, kind of what's going to roll out. We'll have to hedge our bets on that, right?
Right.
But a Google Now phone is the future of Google, right, of Android and of their branch of Android, I should say, because I really think that in the end, the most powerful sort of selling point and the most compelling feature that they have on Android altogether is Google Now, explicitly because it's something only they can really do because of the amount of data they have on you and the breadth of data. So it's not just that they have a lot in one vertical. They have a lot of information about different things, about location and about appointments and about email and about all this stuff. And I don't think anybody else really has that information, or if they have it, they're not leveraging it right. So
I love Google Now.
Google Now phone is the right way to go.
And I think anybody using an iPhone doesn't really know what the power of Google Now is. Even though it's on the iPhone, you have to launch the Google search app, and it's just nice to have it there all the time. It looked like it was always listening. It sounded like it was always listening to you.
Yeah, which could be problematic,
especially I mean, given all the NSA. all the concern about the NSA.
Yeah. I mean, glasses are annoying that way. Too.
And battery life.
Yeah, it's funny that that's not even really an issue anymore. But you'd think about a phone that can listen to you all the time. Battery life has got to be a big issue.
Yeah. So if this is if this comes out, let's say this fall, it would shape up to be a battle between Samsung and Apple, and with these also rans Motorola and HTC snapping at their heels. I feel like Apple's going to have to do something pretty spectacular to keep its mind share. Yes? Anybody?
Well, Apple is a victim of its own success right now. They, if they change something too much, they risk getting a Windows 8 reaction from their loyal followers.
I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at Superman behind you, Natalie.
Yeah.
Matt.
He's running back and forth.
That's Miles. No, he's wearing some sort of fanatic.
It's a Phillies fanatic.
Oh, he's a Phillies fanatic. Natalie, how could you allow that in this house?
I know. He does it. He thinks it's just Superman. He can't see the back.
I think the Giants need to quickly make a cape.
He has a Giants cape,
a Tim Lincecum cape.
Keeps hiding it.
Yeah, they're a mixed. We should mention they're a mixed marriage. Clayton's a Phillies fan. Of course, Natalie is right.
Yeah, I'm like, be quiet, honey. We're talking about Google Now. He's running back and
That's
forth.
Okay.
Actually, he's got.
What is he doing? He's on an iPad there.
He's on the iPad watching Monsters, Inc., and he's got the. The Maxell Kids headphones, because they only go up to 80 decibels maximum.
Cool. That's cool.
Yeah. Just in case anyone's like, kids are not supposed to use headphones until 4, which is true, but they make them for children. So anyway, I digress.
As a person who does this mom stuff, do you have to find you're constantly defending your choices?
It's okay.
You're always on the defensive. Like,
I'm not a bad mother.
I think I do anyway. I probably don't have to quite as much because I haven't gotten the vitriol that I thought that I would over certain things. But I don't know. I guess just that comes naturally because I'm afraid of the mom community.
I think that what really happens is that the news and everybody says, no, it's bad for kids. And every mom knows, well, too bad because I got to do something. Nobody who really is a mom of young children is ever going to criticize another mom for letting them play with the iPad or.
Oh, really? You should.
Really?
Take that
really?
Back.
Really?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of hateful speech.
A lot of fanatics.
In the mom community. Mm-hmm.
That aren't Phillies.
It's the internet.
Oh, yeah, it's the internet.
Right. I mean, you know, the idea is no screen time before 2, although he's going to be 3 in a couple of weeks. But no one really abides by that. But you do hear people in the mom community was like, I never even had my kids in the same room as a screen until they were 2.
Until they were 2? Okay, well.
Yeah.
Okay. I've changed in our chat room. Says, oh, Leo, you've just never been to New Jersey.
So. Yeah.
Just depends on the moms, doesn't it? Google is retiring Latitude, the location service, August 9th. Turns off. They have a new Google Maps version 7.0 they're pushing out now to Android. And I presume at some point to iPhone. Actually, iPhone is a separate app. So I guess they'll just take it off or just turn it off. I used it, but I don't think, I think a lot of people probably didn't. It would it has this nice feature that you could look at your dashboard and see where you've been.
I use it a lot.
Do you?
A lot.
With family members.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I use it a lot when I want to call my sister and I'll see if she's at the gym or if she's at work, then I won't call her. Or, you know, my husband, sometimes he takes a road trip. If he's coming to the mountains, I want to know where he is and know that he's getting there safely. Or for some reason, I always find him fooling around at Home Depot.
Oh, it could be worse, believe me. Home Depot, you should be happy.
I don't know. You should see our credit card bills.
What is Clayton doing at Home Depot now? Was he going to build another bookcase? I can't take this.
He's like, I needed the good sod, not the bad sod. That's why our lawn wasn't growing.
Oh, he's got a Tools Jones. Oh, you're right. That is a problem.
Yeah. But no, I used it a lot. I was disappointed, actually, about this. But, I mean, you're just going to have to be forced to learn to use it within Google Plus.
I think that's
so it's a smart move on their part. Yeah. They can't have all of these services that do something similar. But it's really going to push a lot more people inside Google Plus. My mother-in-law uses Latitude a lot, and she was pretty disappointed as well. So she had never really used Google Plus, and now she will.
Well, that's the plan.
Yeah.
That's the plan. I mean, there's two things I like. I agree. If you're sharing it, and it's a limited group of people you really know and trust with your location, but it's hugely valuable for that. And then it also tells you your historical information, which is pretty wild. So here's, for instance, a map of the few people that I follow and where they are. It'll show me where I've been. The location history is actually really wild. It'll show you a graph of how often you're, how much you're at work, how much you're at home, where you go the most. I apparently spent 26 hours working last week. My average is 14 hours a week. That's not so good.
So the truth finally
comes out. The truth comes out. I thought it was more. I really did. But now I know. You could see how many countries you've visited, how many trips you've taken, how many miles total you've traveled. I just think this is neat. So
this is metadata.
Yeah. Well, the NSA's got it. Why shouldn't I? Seriously. I mean, since somebody else, if people are compiling this, it shouldn't. This is one thing I like about Google. They admit, yeah, we know this. Would you like to see it? And you even have a delete button. Whether that works, I don't know. I have traveled 128,000 miles since I turned this on. In 97,000 more, I'll have made it to the moon. That's my bar graph on my way to the moon. I don't know. I think this is cute. I like metadata. Especially when it's about me.
Yeah, the funny thing is, though, they allow you to check in now on Google Latitude, so you can check in and mark the places that you want to remember.
Right.
But I don't use that, really. And, you know, they want it to be more like a Foursquare where you keep track of where you've been, so you go back there. It's just not the right platform for that. If you know, better to keep that all in Google Plus.
Right. They know that location information is valuable, Ed.
Yeah. And the check-ins are how you monetize a service like this. That's how you demonstrate loyalty to a location, a store, a restaurant, a ballpark or whatever it is. And then that becomes something that Google can sell advertising to. And Google is an advertising company. So not a value judgment there. But ultimately, a service like that has to be tied to very specific high-value advertising to be useful to Google.
As alternative private search service DuckDuckGo, they say they delete all the search records. They don't save them. They don't give them to the government because they can't. Says that their traffic has doubled, although if you look at the actual traffic, you know, twice nothing is not a lot.
Right.
But some people are very sensitive, and they're turning to places like DuckDuckGo. You don't have to use Google, or you can use it in a private way.
Well,
yeah.
Can you? You disagree?
If you have an IP address, and if you have cookies enabled, right. if you're signed into any Google service, just about every website that you go to has some sort of Google button on it, or Facebook button, or Twitter. And so you're leaving little footprints everywhere you go.
That's a that's actually a really good point. The like button and Twitter buttons can be used to, follow you around. As long as sites have Google Plus like or Twitter buttons on there, that's really a signal back to the home office that you're there.
Even if you don't click the
You don't
like
have to
button.
Click them. That's right.
You don't have to click any button. Right. Just visiting the page triggers the beacon, basically. And so as a result, I mean, this is the, you know, we started the show talking about monetization. This is where the monetization comes from for these web services, is people following you around. Facebook,
right.
Twitter, Google.
I guess my attitude is, I understand you got to monetize. You got to be upfront about it, though. And it backfires if you monetize by abusing your customers.
Well, Twitter, for instance, their buttons do track, right? Obviously, any Twitter button you see on a page, that offers a beacon, like Ed said. But their adoption of Do Not Track allows you to actually have those buttons not follow you around the web, and then have Twitter not use that information. Right. But most companies, however, do not implement Do Not Track that way. So, like, some people have been giving Twitter kudos, and I agree in this instance on that specific case that they're doing it how is best for consumers. But most people don't, and it's not in their best interest to do so. It's not in their best interest to make it easy, I should say. So they have to kind of assuage the wonks just enough to where that they can give people like the ability, like, oh, sure, you go into this setting and go into these 17 nested settings and then toggle this off and that on and you're good, right? And so that assuages their need, but it doesn't make it easy. It doesn't make it consumer friendly. And it's certainly not opt-in. It's always opt-out.
Right. When I turn on Do Not Track in my browser, does that – because that's a new setting that you see in browsers now. And it actually
zero effect.
Mm-hmm. No benefit.
Zero benefit.
It doesn't – wait a minute. You say when you check that box, Do Not Track on Twitter, it doesn't do anything?
Well, the Do Not Track standard has not been adopted yet. It's actually – the Do Not Track standard is being debated by the World Wide Web Committee right now, the W3C, and they and the standard is in its death throes at the
wow.
moment. The committee is basically reading the W3C Do Not Track Committee mailing list is like reading, I don't know, the collected letters from Deadwood in 1878. It's everyone wants to kill everyone. And basically the standard is coming down to last call next month.
Wow.
And the advertising industry and the privacy advocates have basically reached a point where they cannot agree.
They're polarized.
So the Do Not Track standard is going to go up in go up in flames.
But if Twitter and any other company that did this, if Twitter has a Do Not Track button, they're saying we won't track. So they're if you check that box as a Twitter user, does that mean that Twitter's not going to keep track of you as you travel around the net?
That's what they say.
But then how do they know it's you? Because they're just keeping track of IP addresses. They don't know that's you. So, in fact, you're right. It makes no sense. Because if I
I think Twitter's – the way Twitter works – and this is based on just a kind of layman's understanding as much as a layman as I can be, writing about it but not actually doing that work,
right.
You know, security work or whatever. But the way their system works is that you're signed in as a Twitter user, right? Like signed in to Twitter.com.
So if I'm not signed in, it wouldn't track
me. Or you're getting no benefit from it. No,
see,
you're getting no benefit from it.
We know that Facebook tracked you even if you weren't signed in by IP address.
Right.
As Twitter said, we won't – because if I'm not signed in, it doesn't know who I am.
What Twitter says is if you have DNT equals one turned on, that
means –
in
your browser.
I have enabled Do Not Track.
Okay.
They say they will use the signals that come into them to perform the task that you asked them to do, and then they will discard the data.
Well, that's good.
That's the way it's supposed to work.
Right.
But the advertising industry is basically trying to – they're trying to do two things. Number one, they're trying to define the Do Not Track standard so that it has a million exceptions in it, allowing them to keep data
about you and correlate it with not only your online activities but your offline activities, and second, they're trying to water down the standard such that the only way that you can turn it on is through not just opt-in but extreme opt-in. You know,
extreme opt-in being the thermonuclear option. What does that mean?
Well, basically,
this is falling apart. You're exactly right.
This is falling apart.
It's falling apart.
Where this became a huge issue is Microsoft last year said with Internet Explorer 10, we're going to turn Do Not Track On by default.
Right.
So when you install Internet Explorer 10, either as an update to Internet Explorer on Windows 7 or as a new installation on Windows 8, you'll get to a screen and it will say, would you like to accept the default settings? And there will be a list of default settings. And one of those settings is turn Do Not Track On. And then if you click OK, then Do Not Track is turned on. The Do Not Track, the advertising industry went ballistic at that. And they said, and in fact, a guy from Adobe, a guy named Roy Fielding, who is also the maintainer of the Apache web server, put a patch in the Apache web server that said, any Do Not Track signals that come from Internet Explorer 10 will be disregarded.
Ignore it because...
Completely ignore it.
Because the default is having it on. And what they want is there's three states, on, off, or no choice. Right on, Miles. Right on. Miles is upset. He is mad as heck. H-E double hockey sticks. And he's not going to... He's Batman? All this time he's been Batman and we didn't even know it.
Yeah. Well, he's the Justice League.
Hey, I gather that you didn't get babysitting. Your babysitting fell. If you can't be here, Natalie, that's fine. Don't feel like you have to be here.
I'm listening. He just yelled he's got a little girl on his back, which is the part from Monsters, Inc. When the little girl
comes
out of the
door. How many times have I said that? No, I don't mind at all. We love having you. I'm just saying if this is inconvenient, please don't feel like you...
He's going to go to bed in a little bit. So he's good with the movie. And if I feel this is untenable, I'll let you know.
Okay. He's adorable.
I'm a fill-in anyway, as it is. I'm like the worst fill-in everywhere. So I was invited on the show on Friday, so...
Well, that's not a fill-in. That's when we plan the show.
Right. Well, no, I meant I was an understudy to who I don't know, so...
Chad, you're not supposed to tell people that you're the second choice, Chad. What are you doing? No, Natalie, you were our first choice.
I just wanted to make it clear that I usually
worst
do
producer
have...
Ever.
I always feel like it's so unprofessional, you know, even on...
What did you tell her, Chad? I don't really want you on the show.
No,
it's Friday, but if
no.
you could...
Molly Wood had to cancel, and so I said, I'm sorry for letting you know late.
Well, that does hurt a little bit if it was Molly. Yeah, I'm used to being Molly's understudy.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
She couldn't be here because we slammed CNET for the first 10 minutes of the show. It wouldn't have worked anyway.
Yeah, she couldn't be here. So, yeah, when I said that it was last
Natalie
minute.
Natalie no longer works for CNET.
And that's why I was saying it was last minute. Thank you so much for jumping in.
I'm always willing. Like I said,
frankly, I didn't know that Molly was going to be on. I wouldn't have asked. I would much rather have Natalie on.
Oh, don't say that now. You're going to.
You're my first choice. I don't know what Chad's thinking.
Sorry. We don't talk enough, Leo.
Anyway, so in fact,
I am concerned about this privacy thing too.
No, it's a big deal.
You make a good point. And a lot of times, I'm sure we're going to talk about the ecosystem later and, you know, the cannibalization of one ecosystem of mobile operating systems over the other. But now the fact that they're so separated, and maybe Dropbox will make this a little bit better, that when I try and opt out of certain things, it precludes me from other things. And so the onus is on you to manage so much. And that's really... That's not the way it should be. I don't think that's a permanent solution.
Well, and to get back to this, the Apache patch, I understand Microsoft's Explorer's point of view. And I don't think that the Apache guy was acting on behalf of the advertising industry. I think he was really making a statement about the tyranny of the default and that there shouldn't be a default on anymore. There should be a default off. You should be made to choose. Is that right, Ed?
Well, the person in question is a high-level employee of Adobe, which is one of the world's largest advertising companies.
Okay, maybe.
So I'll leave it at that.
Maybe there is a reason for doing that then. What is the upshot? Does Apache honor Internet Explorer 10?
At the moment, with that patch in place, the Apache web server rejects DNT signals, do not track signals, from Internet Explorer 10.
So, but Firefox, Chrome, and Safari do honor.
There's no patch in Apache that ignores do not track signals from any other browser at this point.
Right. So you, and I know Safari has do not track, right? Does Fire? I think Firefox does.
So what's interesting?
Chrome does not, by the way. Chrome never will, because if you think Adobe's a big advertiser, who's the biggest advertising agency in the world?
They're Bigfoot. So yeah. This is really fascinating. I mean, I've been following this stuff very closely for a long time. If you have, I described to you the scenario. If you install Internet Explorer 10, there's a big thing that appears on the screen that says, I want to turn do not track on, and you have to click OK, or you can say, I want to adjust these defaults, and you can go in and you can change that and 8 other settings.
Right.
Okay.
It's always been that way, by the way. That's that, recommended, customized for me.
The express settings is what Internet Explorer settings, calls it, right. But everyone has the set of recommended defaults.
Right. And most people, that's the tyranny of the default. Most people just do it.
Most people just choose that, but I'm going to throw an interesting statistic at you at the end of this sentence.
Okay.
What Mobile Safari does is, if you choose private browsing, okay, now private browsing is what a lot of people, is the official name for what a lot of people call porn mode. It doesn't save your history. The official explanation of this is that, you're shopping for a Christmas gift for your spouse, and so you don't want them to know what you've been looking at.
I'm looking for leather and chains and a whip for my spouse. That's it, yes.
And
I want to see what it looks like on models with similar figures.
Exactly.
Of course.
But so if you use Mobile Safari and you choose private browsing, it also turns do not track on. Nothing on the screen ever tells you that you are turning do not track on.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's the way that Apple has chosen to implement
do not track. Apple prefers to err on the side of privacy.
Apple and Microsoft both have shifted to the side of privacy as a competitive advantage.
Right.
Google, of course, is on the other side of things,
right.
And just to defend Google, to take Google's point of view here, they're saying the more information we have about you, the more helpful we can be in providing Google Now type information for you. So, okay, fine. Firefox is kind of in the middle, because Firefox gets $300 million a year from Google, and that's roughly 90% of their income.
Right.
So they have.
But
to
that's
be very
when
careful.
You but use the Google search in Firefox, they get affiliate fees out of that.
Not only that, but Firefox gets Mozilla gets $300 million a year in cash.
Oh,
right.
As a support for the open source project.
For Mozilla Corporation, I'd have to go back and look at my notes on this. It's another thing I've looked at very carefully. But in exchange for that, they make Google the default search engine, and they make it really, really hard to change your default search engine in Firefox. I've been using Firefox as my default browser lately, just because.
So,
and Firefox turns Firefox makes it very easy to turn do not track on.
Right, as you said, so does Safari. So when I use incognito mode in Safari, do not track is turned on automatically.
Right.
When I use incognito mode in Chrome, what happens?
Your browser history is not saved.
Right.
But everything else, if it can possibly go to Google, it will.
And we should point out, incognito mode means that no history is being saved, but your IP address is still visible to every site you visit.
Sure.
And even though those sites probably can't save persistent cookies, they can do something else called fingerprinting, which is in many ways more effective anyway.
Right.
Fingerprinting is looking at a variety of attributes on your system, what version of a variety of programs you're using, what your browser resolution is, what your screen resolution is. All this stuff can be queried via JavaScript from any browser. When you combine 9 or 10 of these factors, they identify you pretty much uniquely.
Right.
So, all right. So advertisers are, you know, this that's why the cookie war is silly. If we make everything private, they'll use fingerprinting.
Well, no, they can't. There's a very strong case to be made for if you are concerned about your privacy, to installing tools that prevent private information about you from being disclosed without your knowledge. Your IP address provides some information about you, but it's a very pale alternative to the stuff that you can get with cookies and such. I mean, you know, Steve Gibson 10 years ago was banging the drum about cookies and how horrible they were.
He still is, by the way. If you've ever tuned into Security
still,
Now,
he still is. And for a long time, he was a voice crying in the wilderness, and really nobody was doing much with them.
Yep.
And now the chickens have all come home to roost.
So let me ask the whole panel this, Matthew and Natalie, as well as you, Ed. So what? Don't I want advertisements that are targeted to my interests? What's wrong with that?
We made this point on the...
Apparently Miles is very upset.
I'm sorry.
Is that his iPad? Because if it is, you're in trouble.
No.
Okay.
But we made this point on the last time I was on Twit is we get a lot of free stuff from that advertisement.
Right.
So
right.
If we're going to have to see those ads, they might as well be more relevant.
You're
than...
going to get ads. Nobody's saying you won't get ads. You'll get ads.
Right.
The question is, are these ads that are based on information the advertiser knows about you or just completely random ads for chicken wire?
Right. And you know what? I don't tend to get really sensitive about that kind of stuff. Like if someone sees that I was researching this kind of, I don't know, fertility awareness book, which is the book I'm reading these days, then, you know,
hey, Natalie,
then I'll...
Just
the
a
advertised
tip. Stop now. Stop now. Okay.
I'm trying to learn the more natural way to prevent pregnancy.
To prevent. That's different.
To have more babies.
I guess you're right. Fertility awareness could go either way, couldn't it?
Yeah. Fertility awareness is what I'm trying to learn to not have babies.
Sorry.
I don't know why I just shared that with you.
Because privacy.
That I don't care. Right. That I really don't care. So if you're from my Facebook friend and you see me liking these different posts about, you know, natural contraception.
You posted it on Goodreads.
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I know everything about you, Natalie. And I'm not even stalking you.
Well, yeah, but I put, you know, I choose a lot of transparency. I know a lot of people don't. And there are people who think
you live
like,
a very public life.
Yeah, me too.
I always have. And even before I was a public person, I kind of was okay with that. So.
Mommy. What do you want, Miles? What?
I'll go push for my baby.
Okay.
He says he's going to go into
a... here who needs a little boy to come play with.
Too bad you're in Santa Fe.
He says...
So that's question... Go ahead.
He goes, you know, he said you're going to come down and you're not. He goes, I need to be able to trust you.
No, he said that?
Not even three.
That's great.
Oh.
I need to be able to trust
you. Oh, that's fantastic.
I'm in trouble.
Wow.
Now you know why I'm practicing fertility awareness.
Yeah. What, Miles? Oh, now he's quiet. So, so that's question number one is, so what? And, you know, I'm not saying people shouldn't have the right to privacy at all, but I'm just saying, so what? I mean, it's not like they're
so there's an answer to
putting
that,
together
Leo.
A dossier so they could prosecute you in the secret court next year.
No, there's an answer to that, Leo, which is that increasingly, and this is not tinfoil hat stuff. This is real. There's companies that you're not even, you know, you would not recognize their names if you saw them, but that are correlating your online activities with your offline activities, and they are using those to make decisions about things that could have a very big impact on your life. So if you're researching fertility, for example, and you're also applying for insurance.
Yeah, Dvorak always makes that argument. I've yet to see that demonstrated.
So this is like what I just said about Steve 10 years ago, right, saying nobody thought that was a big deal.
Right.
By the time it becomes a big deal, it's too late.
It's too late, yeah.
Right. So, and let me just take it like – let's make it a super practical. Just bring that wider argument, that 15-year argument, down to last year, right, when they found out that some travel sites were displaying higher-priced hotel results.
That's right.
To people on Macs, right?
That's right. If you were on a Mac and you went to a travel site, they'd give you the fancy hotels. But that was, and it was, seemed to me, completely legitimate. They said, well, it turns out that people with Macs usually want the fancier hotels.
Yeah, yeah.
They're profiling and
honestly,
you.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I don't agree with their methodology. Like, if I was them, if I was the department head and that guy came to me with that idea, I'd be like, fantastic idea. You know, promotion for you.
Right.
But for the consumer, as somebody who goes after looking for a hotel, no, it turns out if you drill down in that argument, and I looked into it a little bit, is that, you know, the hotels that were regular priced are available to you just as they are anybody else. So it wasn't like
they're just lower down on the search results.
Exactly. So they're prioritizing, right? So what they're doing, though, in effect, is making choices for you.
Well,
so you can argue for or against that, but what happens is once they start tracking you across multiple sites, multiple networks, and creating a footprint of you that's larger than just one site, right? It's not about that site's cookies. It's about
the offline
profile.
Do you shop at Target? Do you shop at JCPenney? Do you shop at Nordstrom? We're going to make decisions based on that as well.
Right. So if you're concerned about that, if you're somebody's concerned about that and not getting an experience that is somewhat – that is not being editorialized, right, an internet that is uneditorialized by advertising agencies and by the people that are leveraging those cookies, then taking your privacy seriously is a concern.
All right. And then the second question is on the other side of it, why are they so attached to this? Can't they? Is it? It doesn't seem to me that the targeted ads I see are all that well targeted. Couldn't they just show ads without targeting? Is it really necessary? You know, the ad companies will say, "No, we have to. This is the only way we can monetize. You can't have Facebook without targeting," which just doesn't make sense. Is that true?
They're addicted to big data.
They want it, whether they need it or not.
Yeah. Yeah, they're addicted to big data in the same way that the NSA is addicted to big data. The NSA probably doesn't need the yottabytes of data that they have. But in the NSA's case, they're so worried that they're going to miss the next 9/11 that they say, let's gather everything. And if we gather everything, then nobody can accuse us of not trying to connect the dots. And in the case of the advertising companies, they say the more data we have, the more options we have. The less data we have, the fewer options we have. More options equals more money. It's as simple as that.
And I think that, we have to kind of remember that as sophisticated as these methods are and as much kind of weight we give them, this is just the tip, right? This is the beginnings of it, as people are just now starting to kind of be able to fracture all of this data down into slivers of targeting. And the targeting thing is only maybe, you know, 12 years old, and the really the finesse has only come in the last 3 or 4 years. So imagine, you know, 10 years from now what it's going to be like, how much they'll be able to tell and how precise they'll be able to get it.
You know, I've interviewed guys at companies like Cadence that 20 years ago, if you give them the zip code, they could say, I could pretty much tell you what magazines you subscribe to, what cars you and your neighbors buy. We've been collecting this information for long before the internet was widely used, and people know this information. So I'm not sure that this is something brand new. Maybe we're getting better at it.
Well, but Leo, the difference between what you're describing there and what we're talking about now is the difference between neighborhood-level demographic profiling and individual profiling. And the problem with individual profiling comes when it's wrong.
Right. Right.
If, you know, if the big data is perfect.
You mean when it's incorrect or when it's morally wrong?
When it's incorrect. When it's incorrect. So, although when it's morally wrong is the case too. So imagine in the example that Matthew gave there about travel websites that give different prices depending on whether they think that you're a demographically correct customer. You use a Mac, therefore you're probably higher socioeconomic status, and so we'd like you to our site. Now let's say that they can go to your profile and they could say, well, you know, you've been visiting a lot of sites that are associated with African Americans, and so we're going to show you that there's no availability for our hotel.
Right. Redlining.
We're going to redline you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you look like you just won't fit
right.
in here.
Right.
And that's thoroughly possible right. with this stuff. And there's the nightmare scenario with individual profiling.
I had never even considered that. That's a horrible thought, especially on a day like today when race is such an important topic.
Yeah.
It really is. These are the things that, because we want to assume the best in the companies that we do business with. And for the most part, the tech companies that we do business with are, I think, they have good motives. I think Google really and truly believes, and for the most part is right, that in gathering all this information about us, they're giving us a better experience with Google now. I think Microsoft is trying to do the best thing for its customers. Facebook, maybe.
I don't think it's Facebook, yeah.
Yahoo, Twitter, all of them. I think most of them come to it from there. But then you start going to the second and third tier companies who are getting this information where the scruples are gone.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Once they're reselling that data, then your morality is right. Sold down the line. It's like, oh, well, every time it goes, you're trusting that next level, the next tier outwards from the original intent.
All right, you convinced me. We should have talked to you earlier, Ed, because you're very cogent in this, and I think you convinced me, and I think you've given us some very good, reasonable examples. So let's take a break, and when we come back, what the hell do we do about it? Because, I mean, it's pretty widespread, and it's going on. And as you mentioned with your example on Do Not Track, it's not going our way. Ed Bott is here. From ZDNet, Natalie Morris, from CrashTestMom.com. Mommy. Yeah. Mom or Mommy?
Mom.
CrashTestMom.com. And from The Next Web, managing editor. That means he does the work. Matthew Panzerino. Great to have all three of you. You're laughing, but it's true, right? Because you've both been managing editors. You know. Right. I was managing editor at the site. That was MSNBC's way of saying, stay in the closet over there. And pretend you're, you know, having something to do with this show. And we'll call you if we ever need you. It's different in TV. Always has been. Hey, let me show you something. This is Squarespace.com. The best hosting, the best software. If you are ready to create your website, you got to try Squarespace. They updated their site. It looks so cool now with little animation and stuff. And this is all done in Squarespace's content management system. But better than that, more importantly, the hosting. You all could go, everybody watching this show right now could go to a Squarespace site. You couldn't bring it down. You can't say that about most sites. Squarespace, because they do the software and the hardware and the hosting, it's very tightly integrated. It all works together. When a site gets more hits, it stays up. And, you know, what I like about Squarespace is if you get the unlimited plan, and let me show you the pricing, you never have to worry about getting a bandwidth bill. You can get everybody in the Twit audience and the /dot audience visiting your site and CNET and ZDNet visiting your site, and you'll never get a bandwidth bill. Squarespace.com. I want you to take a look at the templates. They're always putting out new templates, the new Momentum template, gorgeous. The new events calendar, if you have a site for a band, Or anyone who wants to keep track of schedules, maybe store sales, that kind of thing. Great for that. Squarespace, you could try it free for 2 weeks. Go to squarespace.com, click the try button, play with it, import your data from your existing site, all of that. They've got the importers. They've got the tools. You don't have to be a JavaScript CSS expert to use Squarespace. When you decide to buy, take a look at this pricing. The most popular plan is the $20 a month plan, $16 when you buy an annual plan, $16 a month. For that, you get unlimited pages, unlimited galleries, unlimited blogs, unlimited bandwidth. I'm telling you, no bandwidth bill. No limits on the amount of traffic served to your site. Your site will never go down. Unlimited storage, unlimited contributors. You get a mobile website because every one of Squarespace's designs is mobile responsive. Love that. They'll even, if you buy an annual or biannual plan, they'll even hook up your domain name for free. Get a new one, .com.org.net.mobi.biz or info. And they'll set it all up for you. If you want to add e-commerce, that's $24 a month with an annual plan. And, man, they have just the e-commerce platform on this is fabulous. They've really done it right. I want you to try it. Squarespace.com. Try it free. If you don't have to worry about the plans or anything until you decide to buy. But once you decide to buy, I want you to use the offer code TWIT7 for the 7th month, July. And we will get you... a good deal. We'll get you 10% off that new site on new accounts. Squarespace.com, offer code TWIT7. Seriously, if you're starting a new site, don't go anywhere else. If you're a developer, by the way, I always say how easy it is to use, but if you are a JavaScript coder or CSS, they have a full developer platform as well. It makes it very easy. A lot of people are Squarespace, I think, set up Squarespace sites for others. You know, that's a good business, too. So what are we? So Ed, you finally scared me. I've been listening to Steve Gibson for 5 years now, and you finally scared me.
So this is a virtual high five for Steve.
Yeah, Steve's been the guy. And I've always thought, well, come on, I don't see any negative right now. But you described a couple of scenarios that wouldn't be so nice. And you're right. I don't trust these other companies. I don't. Google doesn't bother me, but I could see how it'd be a problem. So what do we do?
Well, there's two things. Number one, you can lie.
I do. And in fact, I taught my kids early on, you don't have to give them real information on the internet. You shouldn't.
Right. You should try and scramble your online profile intelligently. And the second thing is there are privacy tools out there. And three of them that I can think of. Abine.com. Excellent tool. It's called Do Not Track Plus or Do Not Track Me. They've changed their name. Yes,
they have Do Not Track Me, Delete Me, and Mask Me. Yes. Are these plugins? What do they do?
They're plugins. They work with all browsers, and they basically give you control over what information goes out to other sites. So Abine Privacy Fix.
This is not a free service though. You would pay for it, I presume. Yeah,
Abine is free.
Abine's free.
All of these services are free. Abine, Privacy Fix, and Ghostery are all free.
Ghostery is very informative. If you have Ghostery on Firefox, it'll tell you what JavaScript plugins and cookies and what monitoring is going on.
So the interesting thing about Ghostery.
I highly recommend somebody take like 10 minutes to run Ghostery if they're ever curious or wondering why we're even talking about this. Just take 10 minutes, install it, visit a few of your favorite sites see how much of that is
when
there.
You go to twit.tv, you'll see four or five things. We've got Google Analytics. We have a bunch of things running.
Because
we need to, we want to know how many people visit. We sell that. We sell that to advertisers when how many people saw your banner ad.
It's not nefarious, definitely, but it's an awareness thing, right?
Yeah.
Just so you know, look, I am paying, in fact, for this free site, and I'm paying for that with my information.
And you have the option to turn this on for a site if you want.
And you trust these, like, for instance, I'm looking at privacyfix.com. That's the one of the ones you recommended, right?
Right.
And then I'm looking at the permissions when I add this to Chrome. It can access all my data on all websites, read and modify my browsing history. I'm giving this guy absolute permission to see everything that's going on.
Well, how could they work if they couldn't?
Well, I understand, but you trust them. I'm asking you.
Yes. Yeah, all three of those companies I trust. Now, the interesting thing about Ghostery is that they are owned by – their monetization comes from the advertising industry.
What?
That's the – it's owned by a company that is actually a large advertiser. And so their goal is to get you to install the opt-in module that will allow them to collect information about you in a non-identifiable, non-personal way,
and help them out. But ghostery is one of those weird.
I don't understand that at all.
Weird stories. Yeah. Well, they were a purchase. They were an acquisition. Privacy Fix was acquired by AVG.
Who's recently. That?
AVG, the antivirus people.
Oh, AVG. Okay, yeah.
AVG. And so AVG is one of the biggest providers of, you know, the toolbars that we were talking about earlier.
Well, crap. Now that I've just signed in and I'm giving them all my stuff.
No, you're not.
I'm not?
No.
It said you get permission to access all that stuff. And I, yeah, but now maybe not, I trusted the...
You're not giving it to them. They're not collecting the data. Oh. All three of those companies I will vouch for. All although right. although Abine is the one that so far is completely independent, run by privacy advocates, okay. and as close as you can get to being, you know, ideologically pure. You can use AdBlock Plus.
That's a good one. Except that.
That will block a lot of stuff. Although people, you know, Google pays AdBlock Plus to have their ads served through AdBlock Plus.
So they charge. So they have a white list of advertisers that will get through AdBlock Plus. And they go to them, like Google, and say, for a small amount of money, the ad block will not work on your ads.
Nice internet you got here.
I don't think that's really. I mean, come on. What I'm really starting to feel like is everybody's out to get me.
Yeah, you know what? Good work, Leo. Welcome.
That's the truth.
Welcome to our side.
Oh boy. So now I'm just saying, well, I give up. I don't care.
So I'll tell you what I did, Leo. I don't want to monopolize this conversation, but I'll tell you about 2 months ago on my personal website, which has had advertising on it for 10 years.
Yeah.
And for a while there, it certainly has paid for my web hosting bills through the years and occasionally bought me pizzas and stuff. I removed all tracking, all analytics, and all advertising from my personal website 2 months ago because I can't stomach this anymore.
Okay, well, good luck making a living, dude.
I'm not going to make a living off of my personal website. Right.
Well, fortunately, you've got somebody paying you. And ZDNet is not as scrupulous as you are about turning all that stuff off, so you'll continue to get a paycheck.
Well, but they're also better at monetizing it. So the worst part about the internet right now is
I'm not going to do it, but my bosses are, my employers are.
All of the small sites like you and me, you know, the little guys.
Yeah, out there, I'm not such a small site anymore.
No, if you had a personal website,
right? I do, and I don't have any trackers on that. Yeah, I don't have any trackers on that.
They don't. You know, it's.
But it's more. That sounds more like a political statement than an actual. You're doing something about it.
Well, I don't know. Edward Snowden made a political statement, didn't he?
Yeah, but ZDNet, you should quit your job then, because ZDNet does make money that way.
No, I'm not going to do. I'm not going to do that. I don't.
Well, I don't blame you. I'm not quitting my job either. But
that's the way the internet, unfortunately, that's the way the internet works today.
Right.
But I'm going to make an impact where I own the means of production.
Right. We have analytics on here, but we don't track people. We don't sell that information to anybody.
Right.
You know, we don't give it away. I guess Google's got it because it's Google Analytics. So maybe we shouldn't use Google Analytics anymore. But
there's Google Analytics. There's Omniture. There's Yahoo. There's, there's. It's the way the internet is now.
Yeah. And you know, it's one of the reasons we do the advertising model we do. Our advertisers don't get any information about who listens to the show because they advertise. We just say, this is how many people heard your ad. Give me some money now. And that seems to work for us. But I don't know. What were you going to say, Natalie?
I'm just wondering, it's a nice little manifesto, but, you know, there's so many people who don't think that we have the option to control our privacy. It's either all or nothing. And so that's why you get so much fear-mongering when you watch the daily news. So what are the small ways that we can change the system? What are the small ways that we can say, well, I'm not for this and I'm for this, is just to really dive into your privacy settings.
I guess.
And decide. That kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Abine does that, by the way. One of the things Abine does is it goes through settings and shows you how to turn off, search following you. And it tells you what the pros and cons are, which is kind of nice.
They have a Facebook tuning module also.
Yeah. So I like this. And since you say trust them, I'm going to turn it on and play with it a little bit. I don't really care if somebody tracks me, but that's just me.
But is that enough to create a movement? Is that enough for advertisers right. to say, hmm, they don't like this. Should we start privacy by default? I don't think so.
Well, that's the real question.
It's just us tech nerds doing it right
now. That absolutely is the real question, Natalie. Yeah. Absolutely. That's the real question. And I think the whole NSA thing has made people more conscious of this as an issue.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we were talking about it a great deal because of Edward Snowden. And I'm a little, you know, and maybe that's where politics come in. I'm more worried about the government doing this than private business. And some people might be more worried about private business than government. Oh, I trust the government. It's just law enforcement. I don't trust Google or Facebook. I don't know.
Someone in the chat room says, "Here's how you Facebook tune. You do Facebook tuning. Never create an account."
Yeah, but you can't. But there's so much value in Facebook, right? There's so much value in Google now, and it's not unreasonable for Facebook and Google to monetize that. I think they need to be upfront about it, right? They need to say, "Here's what we're doing." And I think Google does this, by the way. Here's what we do. Google does everything it can to be transparent about this. Here's what we're collecting. Here's your information. Go to the dashboard. You can see what they know. Delete it if you want. You know, but I think they're fairly explicit about what they're collecting. Facebook, much less so.
Well, it's a philosophical thing, right? You have some companies that have decided consciously to sacrifice a direct customer to company relationship for growth, for speed of growth, or for continued growth, rapidity of growth. That relationship has been given up by using the person's information instead of just charging a price and selling them a product, creating that direct one-to-one relationship. Some companies have done that, and they offer a distinct value. Like as I was talking about Google now, you know, that's right. A distinct value that Google offers, and they've given that. So you have to decide yourself whether you're philosophically comfortable with that and then move forward. Or decide whether you're more comfortable with something like, you know, you mentioned with mobile Safari turning on Do Not Track. That's a symptomatic thing, right? Because that is the way that Apple thinks about customer privacy. You are their customer, and advertisers have nothing really to do with that relationship. And so they kind of allow certain things to happen because they're standards. But for instance, the magazine details, you know, magazine publishers are very resistant to newsstand because right. Apple did not want to give those advertisers your personal information because that's a customer relationship you have with Apple. So that has been – that's a kind of a philosophical thing that goes through it. Now, they make mistakes. They make their own wacky choices in some points. But I'm just saying in this case, you have these two philosophies and you kind of have to decide which one of those you're comfortable with.
Yeah. All right. We're going to move on. I think enough said about that. But it's an important conversation. And because we had Ed on, I really did want to talk about this a little bit. I know Ed's been very outspoken about this, and I appreciate that, Ed, and as has Steve. And you can hear lots more about this when you tune in Security Now. Steve talks very specifically about what to do, what's going on, and very technically, and I think that's great. It's one of the reasons we do the show. Dropbox had a conference and announced a bunch of stuff which I didn't really understand. So thank goodness I have you guys to explain it to me. What the hell is Dropbox up to?
Did they give you a bag? That's the question.
I didn't get a bag.
Was it
no.
Blue? Was it blue?
Who is Cylon-ing? Is that Matthew?
Yeah, Matthew. I think we're gonna have to call you back real fast.
No, the thing to do with Matthew, I know what it is. It's been an hour. Unplug your headset and plug it back in. There is a particular chip that has a memory leak.
I'm trying it. How's that?
Yeah, it's all better. 1 hour.
There you go.
It's always 1 hour after you get online, the memory
leaks. Funny.
Is that weird?
Is it the headset?
Yeah.
Is it the audio chip?
Yeah, it's in the headset. Yep.
Because this is a Microsoft Live something.
Yes.
CX300.
Yes, that's
which is literally, they've been making it for like 15 years.
Yeah, it's an older headset.
Same exact one.
Yeah. We'll send you a newer one that doesn't do that next time.
Right.
No, I've heard it so many times. I now know what to do. It's bizarre, but
awesome.
I now know what to do. Yeah.
And that's why you're a pro.
Yeah, no, it's all it is sitting in this seat, and I've got a nice impression on the chair now from my buttocks.
So I have a story about this Dropbox.
Yes,
thing,
tell me. What does it mean?
So, you know, my husband and I, we have an app called ReadQuick where
yes!
we we take your reading lists and then we allow you to speed read them, or you can, you know, open any article, long form article or short form, and speed read it one form at a time.
Teaches you how to speed read.
Right. So if you, it now only works on the iPad, but we're launching an iPhone app coming up soon. And we've been thinking about launching an Android app. And in order to do that, there are a couple of ways to do it. One of which is to own that data ourselves, get a server, hire someone to maintain it so that when you sign in with your ReadQuick account, and then you can use it on an Android tablet or an iPhone. That's really cost prohibitive. We thought about using iCloud to sync between the iPad and the iPhone, but you know, developers aren't all that thrilled with iCloud yet. We had some reservations about
Let me just clarify. So you have to have some content for the reading, and you can use Instapaper. But what you want is, if it's on multiple platforms, it's only been on iPad up to now, so that's not been an issue. But if you're on multiple platforms, you want a user to have the same content on all the platforms.
In any experience. And this goes for any app, even the fertility app I was telling you about earlier. Like, you want to be able to sign in on any device.
So you need to pay for data storage. You need to have...
Right. A developer has to pay for data storage. They can use iCloud, but that's not cross-platform, obviously. That's just only within iOS.
Amazon sells, Amazon S3. They sell storage or AWS.
And so now Dropbox came out with this, and we thought, this is perfect. This is exactly how we can now store information cross-platform, because it will allow us to create user accounts. They will own the data. We won't own the data.
Right.
How much we care about that, we can go back to the previous conversation. So that's what Dropbox's new solution is. It allows developers to use them as the back end of their applications across platforms. So it's one of the first real marriages. Well, I mean, like you said, Amazon does it, but this is a big step, I think, when you think of marrying the two platforms.
So this was DBX was Dropbox's first
API, right?
Yeah. So this is their first developer conference. Up to now, Dropbox has really just been a consumer service that you used, although I see more and more apps using Dropbox as their de facto storage. But now they have a sync API that you have access to, right? Or a data store API. So you can, as a developer, you can say, hey, save this for my user, mm-hmm. right? Does a user have to have a Dropbox account? The user has to?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so it'll be a sign-in like Facebook login.
So this is a really great idea. And as somebody who's followed synchronization services for a long time, this is really, really hard to do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so this is going to be painful.
Look at the companies that have run against the rocks of this, particularly Apple. iCloud still doesn't work. And it doesn't even work for Apple.
Yeah, it doesn't even work for Apple. That's the hard. That's the thing that tells you how difficult synchronization is. Because iCloud is an inside Apple's ecosystem kind of thing where they control every single transaction that goes to it, and it's still difficult. Synchronization is so tough. If you talk to app developers who've worked on these things, I've talked to a lot of Microsoft focused developers on these things, and it's a nightmare. And so if it's just you and your data on one device where you sign in, sign out, go to another device, sign in, sync, sign out, everything works perfectly. The nightmare comes up when you're synced in, you're signed in at the same time on two or three devices, and you start getting collisions in the synchronized data.
Now, hasn't Dropbox demonstrated that they've solved this in terms of our using Dropbox? I mean, I have Dropbox on all my computers, and it seems to work fine. What they do, if you change a file on two different accounts, two different computers, change the same file, it just keeps it. It says, "Well, you got to reconcile this. We got two copies."
Right. So that's at a file level. But imagine that you're at an app data level.
Oh.
Yeah. You're at a byte level, so to speak.
Ooh.
Yeah,
Go
ahead, Matthew.
Oh no, it's okay. Go ahead.
The best example is you and your wife are sharing a to-do list, and I saw this. I wish I could remember the developer's name, but it says, okay, so you've got a shopping list app, and you say, I need to pick up four folding chairs at the store.
And your wife goes and changes that. No, we need 5 folding chairs. But while she was doing that, you were over checking the, because you bought the 4 folding chairs at Home Depot.
Yeah.
And ran the credit card bill up. And then you checked it as done.
Yeah.
So it got marked off of both lists. And so now you get home, and you were supposed to bring home 5 folding chairs, but you only brought home 4 because the problem was more complicated than you thought it was.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And DataStore is the Dropbox API's answer to Core Data, which is the most problematic portion of iCloud.
That's the part doesn't work.
Right.
In fact, I was told by a developer who was at the WWDC, we were kind of surprised that they didn't mention anything at the keynote at WWDC, the Worldwide Developer.
Well, they did. They slipped in one line.
Yeah, but then apparently there was a session shortly after that was closed to the press in which they said, we are so sorry. we know it's broken.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing is, without getting too deep into it, because I don't want to, you know, speak out of turn, but there have been developers that have been working with Apple since literally iCloud was announced, like beta stage of iOS 5, you know, before it even was available to the public, who recognized these problems and had kind of tried to work with Apple on them, even developing documentation about the issues and how to resolve them. And it's taken them this long to get around to fixing it. And it's not like they don't have a lot of other problems, you know, other things to work on. And the teams at Apple are smaller than most people realize, right, that are working on these items. But it's just a telltale how hard this is that people working at Apple who have direct access to those iCloud teams, like literally they could, you know, go to the office over and say, hey, I'm having a problem syncing calendar, you know, to you know, get this data over properly. They still can't fix it. And the developers outside, I mean, they have no chance, you know. So that's why a lot of people are looking at Dropbox's API now as a viable alternative. Apparently, DataStore isn't quite as powerful as Core Data theoretically could be, you know, if it worked. But people are looking at it simply because of the reliability factor. I mean, they've built up a reputation for reliable, straight document syncing. And so now they're basically branching out into this Core Data type syncing.
Yeah.
And people are like, hey, you know, maybe they can
do it. They did the easy stuff, but so did Apple.
Right.
So,
right.
But hasn't Oracle, hasn't IBM, haven't big companies solved these problems? I mean, this is not new. We've had these issues for years. No,
real-time synchronization of
just hard, huh?
Of discrete data items. Databases, you know, Oracle and IBM have solved the problem of databases
right
very easily. You put a lock on a record.
That's all you do. You say you can't change this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So if Dropbox wants to become a competitor to Oracle, good luck.
So you got to solve this without locks. You got to solve it without locks. You got to be intelligent. I don't know if you can do it.
It's a very tough problem, and this is not.
Does Azure do this? Does SkyDrive do it? Is it able to?
That's not what Azure's about. That's not what SkyDrive's about. Those are file synchronization.
These are all file-based. So
those are all file-based.
Okay.
And if you get a file conflict, they just tell you, do you want to keep this one, that one, or both?
That's
and
easy.
Worry about it later.
Yeah, and that's what Dropbox
does. Or set a policy and obey that policy.
So Microsoft's not doing this at all?
Microsoft is working on this stuff. Everyone's working on this stuff.
But nobody's solved it.
It's a very, very complicated problem.
Interesting.
And if Dropbox can solve it, they will win the internet.
Well, they've signed up some big partners: Shutterstock, Yahoo Mail. Thanks. Your Yahoo Mail attachments now are in Dropbox. That's file based. PicMonkey, Asana, Animoto, 1Password. That one, 1Password, needs to use DataStore because passwords are individual. CloudOn, FedEx, and Fargo.
Yeah, you know, what they're all talking about there is if you have an individual app where you can't possibly be working with the same data at the same time from two different devices.
That's also easy, yeah.
That makes it easier.
Yeah.
But when you're sharing things with other people in a work group, and that's, you know, collaboration, Google Docs.
Does Google Docs do it effectively? Doesn't it? No. In fact, if you ever watch TNT, you know, you got Sarah and Iaz and Tom all in the same document. What a mess. Well, good luck for Read Quick then. I hope this is all going to work out for you.
Right. I think one of the bigger, it will allow people to go to a new operating system who might not otherwise been able to, because otherwise we were kind of tied to iOS, and, you know, that's not the best way to be a developer these days.
What does he want? I love Miles. I just love him. The Justice League is here.
You know, you should have Miles stickers as your backup.
Stickers, yeah.
I know.
You always know a family with young children because the van has stickers all over the back window.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Am I right or am I right?
Yeah, stickers are a big deal. And then big if you wash deal. Them while they're still on the clothes, you never get them off.
Good.
Yeah, and cross-platform, though, is a very important thing. So for you, you know, having that cross-platform syncing ability makes the Dropbox thing like a wonderful, it's like fantastic. This is exactly what we're waiting for. So they're going to get a lot of people using this that are outside of the iOS-only ecosystem, right? So they have a big market to kind of tackle, people that are going to Windows desktop. I know iCloud has some basic storage stuff there, but iCloud for Windows is still very anemic. And so you're going to Android, going to the desktop, and that sort of thing. They're going to have a lot of draw there. In the end, I think that their business with iOS developers is going to really spell whether or not it's a success or not, though. So there's going to be a lot of people who is a godsend, but I don't think those are going to be the people that make this or break this.
I have a question for Matthew.
Yes.
Yeah, but Dropbox is made of a lot of independent users, though. Dropbox, as far as I know, is not a big success in the corporation, is it? That's sort of what they made their...
Dropbox is going from the consumer towards the enterprise, and Box is going from the enterprise towards the consumer. So it's basically just a race to see which one gets which way first.
Right. Right. Yeah, BYOD means bring your own Dropbox.
Yeah.
You know, Dropbox has gotten into the enterprise through the back door the same way that iPad has.
Right, right.
But I'm just curious. I want to ask Matthew a question because you're more in touch with the startup space than I am. Do you think Dropbox's goal is to resist being acquired and become big enough to be a top-level player? Do you think they can do that?
Really? They say they don't want Google to come along and snack them up.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, as far as I understand it, that's their current, like, I mean, I am not privy to their boardroom discussions by any means, but from their stance publicly and from the discussions that I've had with people that both work there and, you know, are around there, that that's their current stance, that they want to be as big as, you know, one of the other, you know, titans in the industry. I mean, like you joke about Oracle, but, you know, it won't be Oracle's business, but they definitely want to stand, you know, kind of in that standalone
area. They
want
to be the file system for the internet.
That's what they say. We want to replace your hard drive.
Past. Right. Yeah. And, you know, the replace your hard drive thing, I think they're barking up the wrong tree. I would have canceled that whole marketing line.
Yeah.
That whole
no, I want my hard drive. Nobody's because saying, like, oh, I exactly. wish I could get rid of my hard drive.
Don't even touch two people's hard drive. In fact, don't even mention it because it's not important anymore, right? It'll get subsumed on its own. Right. There will always be local storage, but almost everybody's critical data will be in the cloud eventually. So you don't want to bring the hard drive into the discussion because then you're reaching out and touching personal things that are theirs, right? But instead, we're not going to replace any of that. What we're going to do is we are going to be your new file system, which is exactly what Apple's trying to do with iCloud. They're trying to replace the old file system metaphor with a new file system metaphor that is not a file system at all, right? Or we know it is, but to the consumer, it won't appear that way. So I think that's what Dropbox is definitely aiming for. They're not interested in acquisition as far as I know. I would say, you know, they're skating towards IPO faster than they're skating towards acquisition.
Thanks.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, you can now get a Surface RT for $350. Do you want one? We'll find out in just a second. But first, let's find out what's coming up in the week ahead. Tom Merritt is in the TN. No, he's not. He's in Bora Bora. Never mind.
Nice.
If I had the choice, I'd be in Bora Bora, too. All right. Well, never mind. We don't know what's coming up in the week ahead, but I'm sure it's going to be exciting. Meanwhile, let's see what happened in the week past on Twit.
Previously on Twit, iPad Today. The code is wrong. Please try again or use your locket.
Do you know what your code is?
I don't have a code because I can't create anything because the gosh darn locket doesn't freaking work.
But it's a beautiful
work.
Locket. Damnation. I'm very happy about
and
it.
And here we go.
Oh, no.
And over that 80-foot tree went that ball. In fact, it went over quite a bit.
This Week in Google.
Looks like a Google.
What's rich toast?
Well, you know when you call a notification on Windows toast? You know the toaster? Come on. Like the notification comes out like a slice of toast.
What does rich toast look like?
The Social Hour.
What?
Take a look.
Are you serious? Are you serious? Is this real?
Yeah. Hi, Mike.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Sarah.
Twit. Tech just like you like it.
You know, if you keep watching Twit over the next few years, you can watch Sarah slowly slide into being a cat lady. Seriously. Which is okay, because you can watch me slowly slide into senility. And some say that's already happened, so.
Put the goggles back on.
And somehow, over the course of the years, I've turned into the person who hands off stickers during the
Yeah, show. You know, that's okay. That stage only lasts about 24 years, and then they want pot. Our show. Mommy, where's my blunt? Our show today, bro. Do you have? I know you do. A lot of you geeks have drawers full of old gadgets, closets, maybe entire cellars or attics full of old gadgets. You need to know about Gazelle. Gazelle.com. Sell your iPhone, your iPad, your Mac. Get actual money for it so you can move on to the next thing. Kind of. Pay it forward, keep it moving with Gazelle.com. One of the things I love about Gazelle is you can get a 30-day quote right now. There's no obligation. Just go and find out what your stuff is worth. They will lock that quote in for 30 days. And should a new phone, let's say, come out in the next 30 days that you really, really, really want, you'll have already locked in the price. And the reason to do that is that old phone is not getting more valuable as time goes by. I could promise you. It's worth less every day. So go there with your Galaxy S3 or your Galaxy S4, your Galaxy tablet. Yes, they take Samsung, Google Nexus, Kindle Fire. They even take Microsoft Surface. You know, just out of curiosity, you might actually be able to make money now buying Surfaces at $350 and selling them back to Gazelle. See if they wised up yet. How much is a 32-gigabyte Surface RT worth?
$75.
Yeah, probably, huh? They're not stupid. What shape is it in? It's perfect shape. You got all the accessories. Of course you do. Let's see what it's worth. Hey, not bad. $185. Quick, grab it.
I'm selling.
It won't be worth that tomorrow. I can promise you. Go to Gazelle, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. They are really great. They've paid out now over the last few years. 500,000 customers, $100 million to people. You can get cash. You can get a PayPal credit instantly. My suggestion, if you use Amazon, is get that Amazon gift card because they'll bump that by 5% over their quote. They'll wipe your data for you. They'll even give you more money if your thing is in better shape than you said it was. Gazelle.
They allow you to do fundraisers as well. You can donate gadgets to a specific cause. And some of my mommy friends did that around the hurricane and helped. Just donated their gadget if you think like, okay, $20 or $30 is not really worth my trouble, but it's sitting here.
Isn't that a great idea?
Yeah. Be worth something to someone. Yeah, so if you have a specific cause, like, I don't know, fundraiser for your groups and, you know, your kids' Boy Scouts or whatever, you can start a Gazelle group for that and just say send it in under this, you know, with this group. And then that the money, instead of going to you, will be donated to a good cause.
They'll even buy broken iPhones. So you could just send your broken iPhone and raise money for a good cause. I love that. Gazelle.com. We thank them for their support of Twit. So Microsoft Surface, Staples, we heard the rumor. There was a leaked Staples ad, and now it did happen, in fact, today. $350 for the 32-gigabyte Surface RT. Now, Edbot, you're the Windows expert. Good deal?
You know, at this point, we're at a point in the buying cycle where we know a new generation of hardware is coming out in a few months. You know, we know that come this fall, Windows 8.1 will be out. A bunch of Haswell-based machines have already started coming out, and there's going to be new, Tegra 4 and Snapdragon X, whatever, based machines are going to be out. So if you've thought about buying a Surface RT and the price was putting you off and now the price is lower, then fine. But I mean, I certainly wouldn't buy one now. We're at the summertime doldrums where you're about to get really tremendous deals on all sorts of things.
There's the good thing about the RT is it has Microsoft Office is included. The bad thing is, despite the appearance, it isn't Windows. It's something else.
That doesn't bother me so much. I have a Surface RT that I keep on my desk all the time. It is my full-time music and Skype machine.
Oh, that's not bad.
And it does, and I do a couple other things, and then I'll pick it up and I'll carry it around because it is so light and so pleasant to use that I'll use it for that. But it is most assuredly a secondary machine. And I'll take it if I'm going on a business trip somewhere that's a short flight back and forth, I can bring it and I don't even need to worry about the charger. So it has some advantages to it.
Do you, was 32 gigs enough? That's the 350 model.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And
because it has a slot. It has a slot for a 64 gigabyte SD card.
So you can put all your
Windows 8.1, you can just make that look like it's part of your media library.
Okay. So,
yeah.
That's a compelling reason, maybe. Although I'm looking at this ad at Staples where it says $350, I noticed that, you could get a laptop with a Core i3 for $499. I mean, $150 more. Of course, you don't get Office.
You don't get Office.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me that, and this is just not a, I mean, I don't want to read too much into this, but it's interesting that the low-end computer market is being taken over by half computers, right? By software it's sort of like almost an embedded systems thing.
Right.
Because you've got the Chromebooks at like $250.
Right.
The Surface RTs at $350. And it used to be that the thought was skimp on hardware, right? Make the hardware pretty terrible and put a full version of Windows on it. And we know how the whole netbook thing shook out. But now the low-end market is being taken over by hardware that's not bad. I mean, the Chromebook hardware is okay, and it runs a browser fine, which is essentially what you're running. And then the Surface RT hardware, physically and power-wise, it's fine. The software is really where I think some of the issues came in. But it's just an interesting trend towards almost embedded systems in the low-end machines. And it's the cost differential doesn't add up there. It's just weird to me that they're taking these $250 machines and making them purpose-built software for them.
I do have to point out that the PC market is essentially dying as we watch. Another down quarter. Personal computer shipments down for the first half of this year, 11%. The first quarter, according to IDC, the worst ever in all the years it's tracked PC shipments. Do they consider an RT a PC? I know they consider the Surface Pro a PC, but not the RT.
Neither Gartner nor IDC considers a Surface RT a PC. In fact, this is a column I should be writing right now, but...
Thank you for being here instead. Write it in speech.
I'll do it right here.
Just record it and then you type it out.
Free column. No.
I'm actually going to post it as breaking right as finished.
So Gartner and IDC have different definitions of what a PC is.
No, come here.
Right.
So neither company considers a Surface RT a PC. One company considers a Surface Pro a PC. The other does not.
Surface
because
Pro is
one
definitely
has a detachable keyboard. So one considers a device with an x86 processor to be a PC.
Right.
The other says, no, if it has a detachable keyboard, it's not a PC, regardless of what processor is in it. So the real point here, the column that I won't write, but I should, is that the definition of a PC has become it's like you've tossed the Monopoly board up in the air. Nobody knows what a PC is anymore because a $99 Android tablet can do PC things. Right. A Kindle Fire can do PC things. An iPad and a Surface RT can do very PC things.
Right.
But they're not PCs.
So what is happening?
Natalie's going to bed. That's what's happening. So I'm going to sign off.
Okay. Thank you, Natalie.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks. I'm sorry. See you back here soon.
Distracting. Nice I hope you. I
take care. Night, night, Miles.
The conversation a little bit. I enjoyed speaking with you very much.
Always
thank you for
a pleasure.
Having me on, and I promise to have proper childcare next time.
No problem at all. We're so glad you could be here. Thank you, Natalie.
Bye, everyone.
Natalie Morris, see you. CrashTestMom.com. Is it? I mean, there are a couple of possibilities. It's not that Windows 8 sucks. It's certainly not driving people into the market, but it's not. That's not it. I think some of it is people are happy with the PC they bought 3 years ago. They're just not anxious to buy a new one. Certainly businesses are.
Well, businesses buy PCs on a retirement schedule for PCs that's partly dictated by the IRS and partly dictated by the same kind of, penury that defines Scrooge. if they can make a PC last for 5 years, 6 years, seven years, they will do it.
You'll keep that PC and you'll like it.
So that's sort of that's the reason why XP is still around, even though it's about to, it's 9 years from or 9 months from retirement. But what's happening with the PC market, in the much broader sense of what a PC is people are saying, I can do all sorts of things that used to require something I called a PC. I can do it on a smartphone. Right. I can do it on a small tablet. I can do it on a large tablet. I can do it on a notebook, a netbook, a desktop PC, something at my work, at an internet kiosk. I can do this stuff anywhere. And so what we have is people using a multitude of devices.
That's what's really happening, is it's just a diversified environment.
Because people are still buying stuff, right? I mean, you don't sell 35 million iPhones in a quarter, which are small computers, and not get to say, well, you're giving these people computers. You can't. It's just – it's only the research firms that are like, going like this and going like, that's not a PC.
Right.
Because it's really a personal computer on almost every definition except for hardware perhaps or detachable keyboards, that kind of thing. But the way people are using them is definitely as a personal computer. So I think that what we're seeing is, your PC sales are going down, but your PC sales are in fact going up because people are buying multiple small PCs instead of one desktop PC and then maybe a laptop. Smartphones and a couple tablets.
How much of this informs Microsoft's reorg? Microsoft's really focusing as now a device and services business.
All of it.
It's all about the PC market.
Yeah. Right. It's all about trying to be present on multiple devices and multiple form factors with multiple services.
Right. Microsoft's mission statement used to be PC on every desk running Windows software, Microsoft software. No, they didn't say Windows. They said Microsoft software.
A computer on every desk running Microsoft software.
Microsoft software. So that's not changed in a way. It might not be a computer as we used to think of it. It might not be it's on a desk. It might be on a dashboard or in a pocket.
There's the thing. You've just nailed the thing there. On every desk. Now it's in your pocket.
Right. In the living room.
On your nightstand.
Yep.
I have a Kindle Fire HD on my nightstand. That's my bedtime computer where I read magazines and books. And occasionally check Twitter and Facebook and email.
If you have to.
In the living room, I have a variety of tablets. Everything from iPads to Windows 8 tablets with some Android stuff.
It's probably the case that you and I and Matthew aren't typical, however.
No, but the people...
Let me ask. Chat room and the people in the audience. You have multiple devices now, right? You have a computer. There might be a computer in your office. There might be a computer. No, you're not. Some people say yes. Some people say no.
And one in your pocket.
How many of you have a dedicated bedroom computer? Just the guy in the front. How many of you have a dedicated bathroom computer? No, nobody. Okay, I'm just checking.
Thank goodness.
But I am just like you, Ed. The Chromebook Pixel is my breakfast computer.
But the point is, but Leo, so
I have a computer for every meal.
I have a day. I have a day, night, evening, afternoon, morning, and tea time iPhone.
Yeah, that's you're like Dave Morin. He says, I don't worry about battery life. I just have a day phone and an iPhone. Yeah.
But there's, but we're living in the future.
That's where it's going. Well, right. We always said that. Didn't we? That what was going to happen with miniaturization, more and more power, better battery, and so forth, is that the computer isn't going to go away. It's just going to be everywhere. Your computer, right. Your television is a computer. Your toaster is a computer.
Which goes back to the thin client thing, right?
Yeah.
Where everything you touch is a computer.
Which is why Dropbox has the right attitude. Because all of those computers are going to need centralized storage.
Yeah, and that's why iCloud is a good idea, and SkyDrive and Azure are good ideas, and Google Drive is a good idea, and Google Now is a good idea. These are the things that we're going to be doing, and the three of us are building a world for Miles.
Hey, look at Miles. What is he doing? He's watching an iPad, right? He's watching an iPad.
And telling Mom to get off the internet.
Get off the internet, Mom. I want your attention.
Yeah.
The Nokia Lumia 1020 announced this week a 41-megapixel Windows phone. It'll be available July 26th, $300 at AT&T. The pictures I've seen are stunning.
Yeah, I mean, it's great, right? We finally gotten to the point where it's a camera with a phone attached. I mean, you know, people do... most of the picture taking on phones, and they have for years. So, and I think Nokia should be applauded for making serious strides in the photography department. You know,
too bad it's running Windows
phone. The PureView stuff.
I ain't gonna run out and buy a Windows phone.
I'll digress just slightly with the Windows phone thing. We were just talking about Windows 8.1 and Windows Phone, right?
Yeah.
So, the problem that I have philosophically with the way that Microsoft has approached Windows Phone is that they're approaching it as an accessory to Windows desktops, right? They're approaching it as the phone you buy if you use a Windows desktop. But in reality, within years, it should have been already by now, the desktop should have been an accessory to the phone.
Right.
You know, and they're treating it the other way around, which I think is indicative of the way they treat the phones.
But wait a second. Google refuses to develop apps for that platform. So they can't make it a cross-platform thing. You know, it's Google develops Gmail app for iPhone.
Right.
But says but they won't Windows do phone. It. But they won't do it for Windows Phone.
Why not? Are they threatened by Microsoft and not by Apple?
It's the best way to kill a platform is to starve it of oxygen.
Right. Although good news, Instagram and Path both said we're doing Windows Phone clients soon. So
I wonder if any money changed hands there.
Yeah, it has to. Because it's such a small fraction of the total market, it can't possibly justify the developer cost.
At least subsidize the development.
Yeah,
right?
Microsoft just... But it's completely in Microsoft's interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
To do that. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. If they have to pay people to get them to write programs, do it.
Yeah. Pay the money.
Pay the money. Yeah. And, you know...
They even tried to build their own YouTube app, but that backfired.
Yeah, right. Remember that? Yeah, Google didn't like that too much.
Well, it was the download video button, I mean, that's just kicking the giant, you know?
I love it, though. I love it that they're fighting like that. That's great. So anything else to say about the reorg at Microsoft? It's kind of, for a layperson, I know you cover them dead, so you probably know more, but for a layperson, it's like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. It's like, well, I don't know how that makes any difference at all.
Yeah, I haven't talked to too many of my friends at Microsoft about it. I think it's actually the opposite of that. It's more a reflection of how Microsoft is working today than it is. The reorganization is not trying to change behavior. The reorganization is reflecting how the behavior has already changed.
It's acknowledging what's happening.
Right.
That makes sense. The reorg that a lot of people thought should happen is firing Steve Ballmer.
Yeah, I don't know. Steve's done a pretty good job. There aren't too many CEOs in the tech industry today who are capable of continuing to make a profit. I mean, by that same logic, you know, Tim Cook should have been fired 3 months ago.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Yeah, Microsoft keeps getting overlooked as a wildly profitable company. I mean, people get on them because they've stuck to a business model that some feel they're riding into the ground, right? But that business model has provided them with massive amounts of money and their shareholders with a lot of value.
Right.
So you know, firing Ballmer can seem like a progressive maneuver, but it's also one that spits in the face of everything he has managed to do, right, which is make a whole lot of money.
Right. And the people who did get promoted, their three new executives, three new divisions, are, for the most part, real engineers. Julie Larson, Green, Chilu, both real engineers. I mean, they're the technical side.
Real engineers. And what's fascinating to me is the companies that people think of, or the divisions at Microsoft that people think of as being failures. Bing, the guy who runs Bing, is now in charge of Office.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Which is the single most profitable and highest revenue division of Microsoft.
Right.
The guy who was in charge of Windows Phone is now in charge of Windows.
Yeah.
You know, and Julie's in charge of the Xbox and Surface, the hardware thing. So this is really a new wave strategy. This is really the people who've been building the stuff that is small and has the potential to get larger are the ones who've been promoted into the big positions. And the ones who have been responsible for the last 10 years of Microsoft, not there anymore.
Not there. Well, some of them, because like Don Matrick, they went off to run Zynga, which is the writing on the wall. I have to think that Don got a little heads up. Hey, Don, we're going to reorg and you don't have a role. Maybe you would like to.
Well, maybe, but isn't Zynga giving him $14 million something?
Yeah. Well, no, look, Don Matrick does not need money at this point. I'm sure he has enough Microsoft stock that he's not chasing the money. I think the Zynga job is fraught with peril, but. So was running Xbox, apparently.
My opinion, I mean,
he's the guy who wrote the apology and did the Xbox 180.
Yeah. I mean, if he's going to Zynga, that reads to me like they maybe want to investigate a different way of making money, right? So, I mean, as opposed to the way that they make the money now, which is, you know, finding whales and pumping whales those whales for money.
Do you liken it to Marissa Mayer going to Yahoo? Is he there to reorganize Zynga?
I mean, I think that would be like an easy way to do it. I don't know if it's at all similar, but I think that if he went there and didn't reorganize anything and just went business as usual and just kind of like sales spin on it, I think that would be crazy. Job.
Yeah,
that would be crazy. Kind of a Ron Johnson move, I think.
Yes. Ron, who did so well at JCPenney after leaving Apple retail.
Right. Ron Johnson went to JCPenney, and instead of trying to reorganize the company, he said, we're just going to do this the Apple way.
Yeah.
Right.
And he
brought some people, right? Some people followed him. Some people at like the product development level with apps and stuff like that. And then some people at the web development side of things. And then some people in business development. But I don't think enough people followed him, or he brought in enough people at the managerial level to say like, look, if we're going to do this quote unquote the Apple way, or if we're going to reorganize this around the boutique situation and all that stuff that he did there that didn't quite work. We're going to do that, then I need people that are philosophically on board from here to here in the organizational structure. And I don't think he did that.
That's interesting.
Hmm. Yeah. There's a sense of people who are successful in the tech industry are often successful because they're in the right place at the right time with a set of skills that happens to mesh with the strategic direction of the company at that time.
Yeah.
Right. And too many people treat them like magic pills. Like you can't just drop it into the fizzy water and turn color and they're all good.
Lee Iacocca fired a lot of people at Ford. I mean, at Chrysler, rather. So Julie Larson Green, we debated this a little bit on Windows Weekly. Interesting person. She created the ribbon for Microsoft Office. When Steven Sinofsky left the Windows 8 group, she jointly took over. And now, all of a sudden, she's running Devices and Studios Engineering Group. Is that a promotion, a lateral move, a demotion? I think you hit it on the head, Ed, when you said this is the future. This might be the future area.
Yeah, these are three people who I think have the ability to build things up.
Right. So it's not a step down to put them in a smaller group if that smaller group is the future of Microsoft.
If that smaller group has the potential to be bigger than anything.
That's the growth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and I did a joke tweet about it like last year when Microsoft announced the Surface stuff, you know, and that was started to come down, you know, that Apple had the hardware software epiphany in like 1979, and it took till 2012 for Google to start doing something about it with Android, with the Motorola purchase, which I, from day one, was like, this is hardware. This is not your patent thing. They may have hedged their bets there, but it was definitely a hardware play. And then, you know, Microsoft with the Surface thing. And so that hardware epiphany took, you know, whatever, you know, 30 years for them to come around to it. But that epiphany is very much in play now. And I think that putting these people in charge of a hardware division of in a software company that is going to produce the software for that hardware, that's a very powerful position. So I wouldn't view it as a demotion at all. Instead, I'd view it as a vote of confidence that this person is going to be in charge of where we are philosophically moving forwards.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, a couple of transitions, a couple of, well, a farewell to a couple of stalwarts of the industry. But first, a word from GoToMeeting. It is summertime. People are traveling. Your team is all over the place. Clients and colleagues, hard to reach. And yet, you got to have meetings. You can't stop. It's the way you cut through the clutter. You get to the point. You get the job done. You get the creativity. It's summertime is the best time to use GoToMeeting. You can start a meeting from a variety of devices. You can collaborate from a variety of devices. Use the cameras on your laptop or your iPad and see the people you're meeting with. You can even present from your iPad. Imagine yourself sitting out there by the pool, relaxed in your steampunk two-piece bathing suit, and you've got your iPad and you're meeting. You're getting the job done. Go to meeting from Citrix. It's secure. It's fast. It's easy. Share your screen. Share your ideas. Share your video with the HD faces and try it free for 30 days right now. The best time. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. Use our offer code TWIT. 30 days free waiting for you from Citrix and GoToMeeting. Amar Bose, 83 years old, the founder of the Bose Corporation. Dr. Bose, he was called with great respect by a lot of people who knew him well, has passed away. He was an MIT professor, an expert in sound when he founded the Bose Corporation. Whatever you think of some of Bose's products, the Bose 901 direct reflecting speakers of the 70s were considered by many the best speakers ever. I think the Bose noise canceling headphones are still considered the gold standard when you fly in a plane. Did you know Amar? Did you ever meet Amar Bose, Ed?
I never did.
Yeah. As late as this year when Bose announced new products, he would lead the product announcements and go out there.
A marvelous engineer. The company's products. I had some Bose speakers in my house when I lived up in Redmond, and they were the worst speakers I ever owned.
I've been burned on a few Bose products. I'm not going to sing their praises. We're not saying this is the greatest product ever.
I sold home theater for a long time. They were definitely not considered to be marquee products. But yeah. You have to credit them for actually democratizing that whole high-end sound thing, you know, regardless of where they ended up.
Experience.
Right.
They sold, and they still do sell the experience. And the experience of using a Bose product these days, if you have the Bose iPod stands where you put your iPod or iPhone in them, they just work so well. And so you might be able to buy something that costs a few bucks more and sounds a lot better, but it's harder to use. There's a certain amount to be said for the experience.
I'm willing to bet that what Bose did was maybe, you know, they would never give products for review. They would call to chastise people who reviewed products and gave them bad reviews. But I would bet that if anything, they were making a sound curve that they felt would appeal to people.
Right.
They weren't trying to be accurate. They were trying to make a sound that somebody would listen to, that Bose acoustic wave radio that Paul Harvey was selling. And the person who listens to Paul Harvey would get it home and say, "My God, that sounds beautiful."
Paul Harvey's voice sounded incredible.
It sounded amazing.
Bose wave system.
I think that whatever you say, Amar Bose is an amazing guy, and he donated a considerable amount of his value to MIT. They got a lot of non-voting stock. So, in fact, in many ways, MIT owns Bose. Bose donated a majority of the company's non-voting shares on the condition that the shares never be sold. So if you, at least if you're buying a pair of Bose headphones, you know you're supporting MIT.
Yeah.
Also, a big transition. PC World is no longer in print.
And that, can I borrow your hat and put it over my heart?
So PC Magazine, I was PC Computing.
I was the managing editor of PC World back, and that was in the 1980s when it was still a young magazine and Windows didn't exist.
PC World was the IDG response to Ziff Davis's PC Magazine, right?
It's even more than that. It's even more than that because David Bunnell founded PC Magazine, and then Ziff Davis bought it, and then he founded PC World.
Oh, interesting.
When the non-disclosure agreement expired, he founded the competition.
Right. Now, I don't know. PC Magazine continues online. Is PC World going to continue online, or is it just...
Absolutely. That's their future, is their online. Yeah.
I'm actually kind of surprised to know that they still had a magazine, that people could actually buy a print version.
I was getting solicitations to subscribe as recently as a couple weeks ago.
Of course the tech stuff is going to be the first to go because we're all internet savvy and we're going to move to the internet. But is this a harbinger of what's going to happen to all print? Is it all going away? Is it all going to be online?
I think so. I think that there will be some market for print, for hard copy, for a long time in certain markets and certain verticals, simply because of the demographic, but also
Vogue is not going under.
Yeah, yeah. Right? I think there was ESPN's Body Issue will probably be a good print magazine.
Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition. Sports Illustrated won't write about sports anymore, but they're gonna have bikinis for all time.
The Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition will be the only print issue.
That's a sad.
But yeah, so I think that definitely, and I think that it's part of an overall thing that we're seeing, or that we will see, kind of take traction, which will be sort of smaller, lighter weight publication.
Right.
And I think that big publications will take to that too. I think that they will maybe break their stuff down where you won't have, you know, one magazine covering kind of like a wide array of topics. Instead, you'll have several small magazines perhaps presenting chunks of content on a subscription basis. So I think that that fracturing of the industry will start to occur, and we'll see probably smaller products digitally offered.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thought about the future because, you know, having spent my entire life basically doing first print magazines and then digital magazines, the interesting thing is that the magazine publishing industry was designed around monthly mailings. It was designed around the post office.
Right.
And and in a digital first world, you don't need to have that, you don't have that level of it with you. But the problem right now is that the ability to put a magazine into a digital format is still messy.
Mm-hmm.
Digital from the day one, in other words.
Right? Well, that's the problem, right? Like you said it exactly. They're putting a magazine into a digital format instead of thinking of what a digital, quote-unquote, magazine should be. So I think that a lot of the growing pains have come from people, you know, taking that and squeezing it through the tube into what they feel should present on an iPad, let's say, and it not turning out right because that's not the right way to think about it.
And not having a date attached to it necessarily.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah, because that's a fallacy. It's something that's made up based on discounts.
I highly recommend Harry McCracken's article at Time Magazine, which is still printed, although Newsweek and U.S. News and World Report have gone.
Yeah, it was a great article.
Harry wrote for PC World.
Nobody knows this stuff better than Harry.
Yeah, nobody. And he had fun because he went back in time a little bit talking about other magazines. Harry left in 2008 to do his own online thing. And good for him, but he talks about PC Magazine stopped publishing a print edition. I didn't realize in 2008, a long time ago, Computer Shopper, remember that? You could make furniture out of it. Mm-hmm. A year's worth of Computer Shopper.
Signed an OSHA waiver to buy.
You got a bedside table right there. 2009, they stopped printing. But he even goes back to talk about Byte Magazine, which ceased publication in 1998.
And tried to come back digitally last year.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know how committed they were to coming back. I think Gina Smith really wanted it. And we talked to them a little bit. I think that the parent company wasn't all that interested, really, in bringing it back.
Right.
And it was more like that Gina really, and I, and a lot of others, including Jerry Pournelle, would have loved to have seen an online Bite. But it just didn't, it really didn't have the support of the owners. Right. Creative Computing, he talks about. Remember that?
Oh, God, yes.
Great magazine. Early 80s. 80 Microcomputing, the trash 80 magazine he talks about.
And Dr. Dobbs Journal.
Dr. Durb, remember, running light without overbite was their motto. Compute. Just some classic magazines. I was remembering today, PC Magazine used to have a Spencer the Cat party because that was their gossip columnist.
Yep.
That was one of the hot, that and Dvorak's party were the hot tickets at Comdex.
The hot tickets.
If you could get into that, the Spencer the Cat party, you were an A-lister. And I remember very well standing next to some guy dressed in a cat costume and Bill Gates dancing. And those were the days, my friends.
Did he have a wine stain down his shirt?
Oh, Bill, it's so funny because he's even then was probably the richest man in the world. And he danced, white man's overbite. He was biting his lower lip. His butt was sticking out. And he still was surrounded by beautiful women. So I don't.
Yeah.
Somebody said, it's not like he leaves billion-dollar bills on the pillow the next morning. Apparently, that's not the case. I don't know.
Not going there, Leo.
Not going to go there. Bill is now he's like Andrew Carnegie. He's a esteemed philanthropist.
He will be giving a speech, the keynote speech this week at
the Allen Conference?
Might be the Allen Conference or the Microsoft Foundation, but it'll be a speech where his primary role will be what he does these days, which is goodness.
Yeah.
And so that'll be fun to watch.
It's not really it's not fair to compare him to Andrew Carnegie. Andrew Carnegie had a crappy reputation, was a union buster, steel magnate, who said, I don't think this is good. I'm going to give some libraries. Actually, he was a Scotsman, so he probably talked like this. I'm going to build libraries. Maybe they'll forget the union busting. And they do, of course, because it's Carnegie Libraries. Even here in Petaluma, just down the street, there's a beautiful Carnegie Library. Nobody remembers the other stuff. I think Bill doesn't have anything to hide. And good for him. He's given away billions and billions of dollars. It's fun, indeed, though, to think of those old days. Here's a picture that McCracken posted of Bill talking about MS-DOS 2.0 with Chris Larson, I think he was at Microsoft.
On the right, is that Andrew Flugelman on the right?
Andrew Flugelman. He was the editor at PC World.
Yep.
Isn't that great? Steve Cook is the long, tall, skinny guy to Bill's right. All right, well, enough old-timer memories. I am ready to power down the steampunk laptop. Turn off the burners.
You need to get in your hot tub time machine.
Do you have to vent it? Do you have to open a flap on the side?
Yes, I have to, and then let the steam out slowly. The boilers will shut down, and then the dirigible's ready to pick me up, and I'm going to fly off to another time. Ed Bott, so great to have you. Z, where should people go to read all about your stuff at ZDNet?
They can just Google me.
That's probably the best. Don't ever use a ZDNet search tool. Just Google.
Yeah, just edbot.com.
I hear that if you do it, it installs a toolbar.
If you search for EdBot on Google, the number one result is the EdBot report, which is ZDNet.com/bot. And that's where you can read everything that Ed does. And, of course, EdBot.com is his website. Hey, we got to get you back more often, Ed. It's been far too long. Ed used to be on the radio show with me and Dvorak many years, talking about Windows 3.1.1.
Oh, it was even before that.
No, really?
Shh, don't tell anyone.
Windows 3.0. Yeah, because we started doing that show in 91.
Yeah.
Dvorak on computers. Wow.
Yeah, we're old.
Leo. We're really old.
We're old.
That's older than Jurassic Park. And a brand new guy.
Matthew's going, how did I get sucked into
the old timer? No, Matthew's great. I think Matthew appreciates that. because he's a managing editor. He's in the trenches at the Next Web.
Oh, yeah.
It's great to have you. First time on Twit, but not your last. I hope you come back real soon. Matthew Panzerino. TheNextWeb.com, at Panzer, which is a really good Twitter handle.
Thank you.
Do you write about tanks? Oh, we muted him. He muted himself. Why are you silent suddenly?
Did I mute myself?
You did. Okay, good.
Yeah, even I'm not worth. Even I think I'm not worth listening to.
No.
No, I that Twitter handle. I have to credit Dan Morin of Macworld for giving me that nickname because he felt I needed a more masculine nickname.
That's masculine. Name yourself. Yeah, after the.
That's how you survive living in Fresno.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Hey, don't count Fresno out, man.
Thank you guys for being here. We do this show Sunday afternoons, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That is 2300 UTC on twit.tv. I hope you'll watch live. We love it. And if you can come to Petaluma, California, in the middle of God's country, you could just email tickets at twit.tv. We'll make sure we have a chair put out for you. I thank all of you who made that long trip from as far away as Canada. Anybody farther from than Canada? No. All right. We also thank Natalie Morris for coming here. If you can't, it's always great to have Natalie. If you can't watch live, do download video or audio. We have on-demand versions of both available at twit.tv and wherever podcasts are aggregated. Just search for Twit on iTunes or in the Zune store, places like that. There you go, right like that. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next week. Another Twit.
This is in the can.
Yay.
Doing the Twit.
All right.
Doing the Twit, baby.